Welcome to Survive and Thrive, DW Academy's dialogue with media managers on innovative and sustainable business models in a challenging global media landscape. We'll talk motivation, lessons learned, funding models, decisions both good and bad, and recipes for success.
Hello and welcome to Survive and Thrive, your media viability podcast. I'm your host, Janelle Dumalaon. Now, if this isn't the first time you listen to us, you know that what we usually do is talk to media managers and decision makers from outlets around the world and discuss the unique way they're affected by the common challenges involved in running a media operation and how they're staying viable despite those challenges or working towards some kind of viability. Today, however, we're doing something a little different. We're starting from the premise that media is not viable, that on a systemic level, something is broken. Our next guests have spent a lot of time looking at what exactly is broken and where we could begin to fix it. Claire Cook and Laura Moore are two of the authors of the Media Viability Manifesto, what they call a common framework for joint action. Welcome to the both of you.
Thank you.
Hi.
In a moment, we'll go into what that means, but first we have a short round of introductory questions for both of you. This is usually a standard lightning round with short answers, but we've adapted them a little. We still want the short answers though. Starting with you, Claire, the Media Viability Manifesto in a catchphrase.
It's really a call to action for the media development community to tackle the economic challenges facing media organizations.
Laura, the Media Viability Manifesto in a catchphrase.
I would say it is the first ever joint and widely agreed on suggestion from the media development sector to solve the economic crisis facing media with very concrete steps and actions that can be taken by the different stakeholders.
Having looked at the challenges to media viability from a more meta overarching perspective, would you say everything is lost?
I would say no, even the contrary. I would say there's almost a window of opportunity now with all the developments around AI, with mis and disinformation everywhere. I think there's a raising awareness that we actually need a big change. And there's also first initiatives for change.
I don't think the economics of media is entirely lost, but there are many aspects of it that still remain fundamentally broken, which means that for many, many media organizations around the globe, their financial status is really the biggest challenge and their most chronic difficulty.
And I feel like this dives nicely into the next question. What would independent media need to thrive in the future, Claire?
Really, what we need more than ever is a combining of multiple different approaches. What often happens is there's a bit of blinkering where one particular approach becomes the favoured approach and the lens turns onto that, whether that's reader revenues or the economic returns from big tech. But what we actually need to do is find a way to keep multiple approaches in the limelight at one time and coordinate and blend them more effectively.
So within both of your answers, there are a lot of themes that we're going to get into. This idea of joint coordination, this idea of fixing the economics of media, and this idea of using the moment that we have at this particular time, also in view of the challenges of the future, to do something about all of this. Now, before anything else, one of the things that the manifesto is trying to do is get everyone on the same page with regard to what, in fact, we're talking about when we say viability. So what is it that we're talking about and what are we trying to do?
Well, maybe I start. What we did was really come together with a lot of people realizing we don't really have the answer to your question. What is it that we're actually talking about? And we're very happy that the manifesto now offers an answer for the first time, really an answer from almost 150 people that gave input to that. And we agreed that media viability is an overarching term for a field within the media development sector that really focuses on the enabling economic aspects for media outlets and also media systems.
Really, as Laura said, it was quite shocking to us that when we got many, many stakeholders in the room together with a conference that was even entitled Media Viability, when probed, no one actually knew what we were talking about. The boundaries of this arena of work were very, very unclear. And within that, therefore, very difficult to offer coordinated responses and priorities.
So what we're talking about when we say media viability, a lot of it concentrates on enabling the economic conditions that would allow media outlets to survive. But is it really just about business viability?
I think what kind of is an important distinction to make, and it isn't just a conceptual one, it actually does really impact on the way donors see their allocations, on the way that we organise research, the way that we advocate. Media viability is at the sectoral level, as Laura's described, but business viability is really at the organisational level. And when we're talking about business viability, there are numerous different components that go into ensuring that an outlet, an organisation, can have viable or sustainable operations.
I think, you know, we actually thought, because the two words that are used all the time are viability and sustainability. And what is actually the difference between the two? And we thought, and we found in our discussions over time, that the difference between them mainly is this component of time. So that a media house can be viable when it, you know, is able to produce independent content over time that is important to their audience, their community. But it could be that this only happens, for example, in front, like before some elections, and then the media outlet stops the services. A sustainable media outlet is able to do that, to produce the content over time. And this is basically something beyond viability, is the sustainability of a media outlet.
So I think those are very good definitions. This idea that, of course, media is something that we are going to continue to need. We are going to continue to need media to not just be operational on a daily basis, but actually have long-term perspectives and be able to deliver what the audiences are, what the audiences, again, need from journalism. But let's look at the problem a little bit more. You've mentioned both of you have mentioned the economic conditions a lot. Why is it so hard for media to survive and even harder to thrive?
If I can dive in, there's obviously multifaceted challenges, and it totally depends on which context media are in. There's all sorts of different states that they might find themselves in, from opening markets to closing environments to crisis or even exile. So depending on those contexts already will have a huge bearing on what is even possible or feasible. But as well as that, you've got the global changes over the last sort of decade, unbundling of news information and audience fragmentation, this gap almost between the relationship between a media house and their organization and their audiences because of the platforms and their role in the distribution of news, which makes things very, very difficult and trying. And then, of course, the platforms, this platform economy that we're in, I think nearly 50% of advertising now goes to the main platforms, which creates a very difficult situation where most are still using advertising as one of their revenue streams. And then, of course, you have all the other specific contextual factors, whether that's media capture, whether that is government interference in advertising placements or regulatory controls and weak digital infrastructures. So at any one point, there can be many, many, many different factors that are constantly, in effect, bashing this problem into the face of media who are trying to defend public interest spaces.
But I would add to this, because you specifically ask about, you know, surviving and thriving. And I think what we also as media development organizations have been focusing on for a long time is the surviving aspect, to really look at, okay, how can a media outlet you know, innovate? How can you really look into your business model, business plans, capacity of staff, and really to see even in these very difficult environments that Claire just mentioned, to survive on the everyday basis? And I think lots of also guests here on the podcast that we've heard really describe this kind of everyday struggle. And I think the thriving aspect to it is really, okay, if you want to be able to thrive, you need to operate in a system that allows you as a media outlet to thrive, right? You can survive on an everyday basis, but you can't thrive without the environment that allows you to do that. And I think this is really important. This is also something that comes out of this manifesto, to really have this overall meta level and perspective on what all the aspects that are needed to be able to thrive, and not only to survive.
One other really complicated aspect and dimension to this is also that it's not about all media surviving at all times. We want to support diverse and pluralistic media environments and media landscapes, but that might mean letting some media die out while others and new ones spring up. So it's there's a lots of complicated factors, which really does mean that we can't take a binary approach at all.
So both of you have alluded to the complexity of this topic. And we've spoken to media managers in Zimbabwe, the Philippines, Ukraine, Bolivia, and elsewhere, all with the sort of funding challenges you mentioned, all facing tough economic conditions, but all with also a set of problems that are unique to their situations, their particular media landscapes, as you've alluded to earlier, Claire. What's the best way to collectively address media viability issues while keeping the specificity of everyone's sort of own circumstances in mind?
That's one of the things that we've tried to achieve, actually, with the Media Viability Manifesto, which is an initiative now that's gone on for 2 years. As Laura said, you know, more than 100 different people, organisations being involved and inputting. And what we've tried to do is synthesise that, really, to create this map, which articulated as a theory of change. But from my side, I would certainly identify kind of three priority areas. The first, we see continually that there's a need for long-term core funding. What's very, very difficult for media is this short-term cash culture. There's a small grant here for this particular content theme, that there's this particular small grant that goes with this accelerator program, that there's very little coordination and strategic thinking. And it creates this schizophrenia almost about how do I literally grab tiny bits of money here, there and everywhere. And that very much detracts from their own strategic thinking, their own entrepreneurialism, if and where there's a pocket for that to occur. So that I think is one really important part that we need to work on, is more coordination and more long-term strategic thinking. The second I'd say is there's not a lot of money usually put aside for organising, whether that's supporting coalitions on the ground, collaborations, partnerships, shared services. And actually, those structural elements, if we can find ways to bake that into our programming and find ways to enable that, then I think that would be a really great thing moving forward. And the third area from my side, I really do think that we need a more varied portfolio of different ways of offering investments, grants, getting the public sector involved as well as the private sector. So that's really on many stakeholders that need to, in effect, upskill their own knowledge around these different varied mechanisms of getting more capital into the system, as well as distributing what exists already.
Maybe I can add something to, you know, the question of how you make sure that you consider the local context and the special environments that media operate in. And the manifesto here, and this is really important, offers this overview of things that should be looked at, that can and should be looked at, but really always from this, you know, context specific perspective. So if you're a media manager or media house dealing with with problems in your media system, in your everyday life, you can really have a look at, okay, what can I do to improve? There's the level of like business and technical supports. That's one area specified in the manifesto. You can also see, okay, maybe I can engage in advocacy, in coalitions, partnerships that Claire has already mentioned as well. Maybe what I need is more information and more research, more insights into, you know, also that specific context. So all these are areas that are explained and that are kind of laid out in the manifesto, but they really... It's to be understood as a basis for discussion, as a starting point, and then you actually have to really go deeper into it with this context-specific perspective.
This might be quite an abstract question, so please bear with me. You've spent a lot of time out on the field. You've spent a lot of time gathering inputs for this report. There is an ideal that you lay out in the report that would provide more standing for these media outlets in order to be able to become more viable. How far is the current reality away from the one that the manifesto would like to see come to life?
That's a really good question. I think a long way.
The reason I ask this is because, you know, there must be elements of this that are happening already. Like some of these things, people are already trying to enact. So I suppose maybe it's happening in a disjointed manner. It's happening to different degrees, different speeds around the world. So this is why I'm asking, how far is there to go?
What we all, and this is when I say we, the different stakeholders, media managers, media development organizations, even donors, are really good at is these more individual, quite specific activities of, as I said, improving business models, really looking into strategic planning. This is something that also we as media development organizations have really been focusing on in the past because we thought that this might be the answer, strengthening media organizations to really be, you know, have a good answer to this business and kind of economic problem. And there we are very far away, the reality is far away from an ideal situation that is outlined in the manifesto, is really this broader, really kind of joined approach, synchronized approach, where we have to come together as different actors. And the point is, you know, you asked about providing, you know, more long-term money for media houses. This only functions if we have enough insights into where it actually makes sense to invest money, by whom, what the outcomes are, what impacts the different activities have. So we as media development organizations have to get better at coordinate, having a more joint strategy of improving the situation of media viability, but also really to share best practices and almost more importantly, I would say, failures and maybe mistakes and things that we have done that haven't really worked, right? So we need to learn from these lessons and experiences that we've had to really come together with the different stakeholders to tackle that super complex problem. And as long as we don't do that, as long as the different stakeholders don't take their role in this puzzle, and this includes big tech, and this includes public actors, policymakers, as long as we don't kind of come together and have a joint understanding of what is needed, it will be super hard to get closer, you know, to the answer and the solution.
Yeah, as just to add to what Laura's saying, you know, I said an excellent question. I think when we all did exchange on where we were strong, that there was a sense that there is support out there in terms of the capacity development of different media organisations. But that doesn't mean to say that that's won by any stretch. I think most media are more aware about diversification of their revenue streams, and they're doing what they can. They're putting emphasis on strategy. They're putting emphasis on leadership. So they're trying really hard to do whatever they can to obviously fund their operations. I'd also say that there are many initiatives moving forward on media finance legislation. Even in Indonesia and Brazil, we're seeing fledgling attempts, you know, in smaller countries and regions to try and have those dialogues with big tech platforms. So yes, attention goes there. And then also organising. There's an appetite for local funds, national funds, these things that are going on around different practitioners where there have been steps. I think, as Laura's saying, where we are far away from getting towards that goal is keeping all of those in the air at once so that we actually have this blended and coordinated approach.
Is there enough of a pie, if you see what I mean? So when everybody gets together and tries to coordinate and tries to mobilize the donor community, the private and public sector, potential sources of revenue streams. Now, media is diverse enough that there's probably a niche for absolutely everything. But how do you square the circle of coordinating while also competing for the same finances that I can imagine are limited around the world, even as new ideas are added every day?
Again, an excellent question. I mean, the recent OECD funding allocations reveal that, you know, there really is not a lot of money put to one side for media development. We know that we need more actors bringing in more capital, whether that's kind of more open-minded philanthropists based in local environments, whether that is corporate social responsibility funding from private sector, whether that's different government options, or whether it's the media looking to diaspora audiences and alternative audience segments who might be able to fund journalism. The fact is that everyone's trying their best to have as many dimensions that they can look at, as many avenues, but it does still make it very, very difficult, particularly when you have these ginormous crises, you know, whether it's the Ukraine or the problems in MENA, that naturally draw attention and require a different prioritization. It does make it very difficult for there to be a pie that's big enough for everyone to share.
But on the other hand, I would add to this that there's also a lot of context and regions, sometimes on the national level as well, where there are so many media houses, just because it's become much easier to open up and become a media. And there's just not the audience for it. So that makes it more important even to really know, as a media house, and we all know that, to know who the audience is, what the audience needs, and what my own niche is as a media house, right? That I actually have an added value to the public interest, and I serve, there's a community that I can serve. And this kind of hyper competition of media houses sometimes means that, as Claire has said, you know, that not all media can survive. So it really is about making sure that there is a space in the environment for the media house and a need, basically.
So say I'm a media manager, I have the media viability manifesto in my hands. How best to read it and use it? So there's a lot of advice in there about coordination, about building coalitions, about organizing research. So I have it in my hands. What do I do next?
I think a lot of media work in one way or the other with donors or media development organizations or, you know, other actors that they are kind of build strategies with. And I think the manifesto really is a good starting point to sit around the table, take the theory of change, as we call it. So basically, you know, this map that shows you, if you want to get to media viability, here are the different steps and actions that the different actors have to take in order to get there, right? So it's quite concrete. If you take this map on a table and you say, maybe with one donor as a media house, I am looking at improving audience engagement. Maybe then I am now speaking to another partner and I would like to, you know, engage in, as you say, you know, advocacy or coalition building. You can really take this as the starting point to build a strategy that also then allows you to synchronize your different actions that you do with different partners and different people. So this is, I think, the first opportunity that the manifesto gives you if you are a media owner or a media manager.
Yeah, I would also say, I think hopefully it would enable a practitioner to also pinpoint their needs. You know, if they particularly in the first track, which is in the capacity development at the business organizational level, if we've identified as many, many different practitioners with lots of experience, the different sort of steps that we think are critical factors in getting, you know, towards the desired change we want, it might help target and a rationale for why there is a need for particular capacity development at any one of those stages, whether that is, for example, making more market research or audience data that's potentially lacking. We know there are huge black holes in the data that is available for media practitioners in order for them to build the strategies they need. So it could be around that. It could be around leadership training. It could be around impact. One of the big themes to come out from this is that and fits with a global trend, really, to better understand the value in the impact of journalism beyond measuring reach and other vanity metrics. So from a practitioner's perspective, having that 360-degree view of what types of changes they're bringing around in their local communities, what kind of impact they're having, helps us all paint this picture of what is the role of journalism, why it needs funding. So there's also really important contributions that we need that connects that local to global.
Janelle, because you asked about the usage, I think the podcast is also listened to by media development actors, right, and organizations. And I think here we really need to use the Media Viability Manifesto now as a strong tool for our discussions with donors, direct discussions with donors as well, to really make the point, look, it's not enough to do X, but you also have to be aware that you need to do Y, which is, for example, research and insights. This working terrain that we identified is something that is hardly funded at the moment. You don't really get grants to properly engage in action research and really, you know, dive deep into certain topics. It's sometimes a part of media development projects, the whole kind of learning and research side, but it's really, really hard to get it funded. So if you see the manifesto as an overall, you know, a tool that gives you an idea of the overall different aspects needed, then you can also go and say, we also need to get better at research, for example, or we also need funding for advocacy. That's also another thing that's really hard. It doesn't just come from conversations. It has to be strategic. It has to be coordinated. That needs resources, right? So this is another thing where I would say really the fact that it's developed by so many people from over 50 countries representing more than 80 organizations, we should use it as a strong tool also, you know, with kind of verbalizing our needs as media development organization towards donors.
I wanted to go back to something that you said earlier, Claire, about the global connection here being what is the role of journalism and why does it need funding? So as you're going about educating media managers and actors in the media development space about these steps to keep in mind and this theory in change, what about this theory of change? What about this larger environment of donors and private and public sector stakeholders? Do you feel that there is enough of an understanding of what journalism needs to thrive?
No, I don't think there is. And there's a big piece to be played. You know, everybody is, I think, well-versed now in the Sustainable Development Goals, for example, but few recognize the importance of media in bringing about those changes and the important role that they play in stabilizing local communities, in meeting information needs, critical information needs. So I think as a sector, we are trying to use the Media Viability Manifesto and other coordinating tools to make sure that we have the necessary evidence base to make that case.
So, Laura, I also wanted to return to something that you said earlier. You've referred to this manifesto a few times as a starting point for discussion. Are we to understand the manifesto as a sort of living, evolving document?
Yes, it's really important to always remember that this is nothing kind of set in stone. It's the closest that we've ever got, I would say, to agreeing on certain things and to coordinating and finding a common strategy. So this is a big achievement, and this is something, you know, that also is, that will remain there, right? But definitely should be used as a living document, because also the environments that we are talking about and working in are changing all the time. And there's new developments, you know, of course, everything around AI at the moment changes lots of things. But with the environments changing and with the realities changing, of course, also the strategies have to change, right? So this is, I think it's quite robust, what you can find in the manifesto, but definitely it needs to be used flexibly.
AI has also come up. I remember quite early in this conversation, you framed it as an opportunity. Of course, it can also be a disruptor, a source of uncertainty for many a media manager in this business. So, and you've already made the point that the challenges don't really seem to end; they change or mutate. How does one take the Media Manifesto, the Media Viability Manifesto, along with them throughout these changes?
I mean, to allude to what you were saying around AI and this window of opportunity, I do think that we have a lot of things that we learned from this, you know, so-called social media era. So really, you know, what we learned from social media and the dependency on social media, and obviously, you know, the problems, the economic problems that come with the dominance of big tech. So I would say, as media development organizations, we have also to some extent let partners down in the way that we didn't realize quick enough, you know, that it was a bigger problem, that it wasn't really about the individual media houses, as we said, but really the systems problem, right? And I think that with the increasing importance of AI and all the developments that we are seeing now, the opportunity is that AI companies, but with training their large language models and chatbots, whatever, they rely on up-to-date, fact-based content, which is often provided by independent media houses. So if there's, you know, this is why I'm also saying maybe there is a window of opportunity here, because there is a dependency on news and on media content. And this potentially gives media houses a better negotiating, you know, position with these companies. And we should use here really the lessons learned, things that we missed in the discussions and the developments with social media, and really try and do better this time. This is why I said a window of opportunity.
And one really important dimension of that that's come quite a lot is when I talked about supporting diverse and pluralistic ecosystems. A lot of smaller media rarely get the necessary seat at the table for discussions, nor do they get their appropriate share, whether that is from structural changes from government ad placements or, specific legislative deals around business-based negotiations with platforms. So what we're also looking at always is the health of the ecosystem and the provision of that to ensure that we really can make sure that this isn't just designed for corporate legacy or mainstream media, but that really does provide the necessary frameworks for all different types of producers.
When we talk about the future of funding for diverse media around the world, not just the legacy media that for a long time has been based on advertising revenue or whose finances have been largely based on the advertising revenue, what is the future beyond, as you've pointed out earlier, sort of short-term grants, partnerships here and there, these piecemeal approaches to the financing that you've talked about? What does a coordinated, synchronized funding model look like for a media outlet in a developing country?
Maybe a start. I mean, we are seeing some quite promising developments around national journalism funds, which is one way to distribute money, ideally independently to media that are of public interest. There's a lot of discussion about taxation at the moment. So-called bargaining codes, so kind of legal approaches to hold big tech to account and make them pay for journalistic content. And the good thing is that often these conversations start at the, so-called global north level, but we see South Africa, Indonesia, Brazil, other countries really also, opening up towards these new models and new ways of financing, basically. And I think this is something that potentially is part of the solution for the future.
And that's almost what we would describe as like the outside-in approach, but from a practitioner's point of view, inside out. I think what we're also seeing is quite a lot more interest in entrepreneurial journalism. So actually looking at diversification outside to adjacent products and services. We've seen a lot of evidence of that, particularly in the MENA region, in some contexts in Asia. What we might have to be looking at is how do we actually support journalism by developing different products and services. And that might open up new opportunities for different styles of investment.
That really is very interesting. And I also think that you had made an earlier point about sort of new legislation around financing journalism, and that this all comes together with what Laura was saying. I was also wondering, because as they say, necessity is the mother of invention. Have you seen any sort of evidence on the field, like from all the outlets and the stakeholders that you've talked to, that smaller, more diverse media around the world might actually be faster at getting to these newer funder models, getting to these new sort of products that they could sell to audiences than perhaps legacy media is, just because they have had to be adaptable?
I mean, typically local community startup, digital natives, there's very many different kind of ways of describing what we're talking about here in general terms. But they do tend to be excellent innovators, very, very good at making a little go very far, making a lot from a little. They're very agile. They are very keen to explore different possibilities. But where that tends to have a little bit of a glass ceiling is they simply don't have the technical, the software, the scale that's needed for market research to convert some of the options that are open to mainstream media. I'm thinking specifically around reader revenues that requires an enormous amount of software and data and technology to make it work.
But I would add, I mean, I've seen in Colombia, comes to my mind now, also Kenya, really efforts to diversify in a way that goes quite far beyond the journalistic approach and the you know, mission. And very often it's really impressive, you know, small community radios literally buying chickens in order to be able to sell eggs, right? This is one. Then we have seen examples of media houses selling wine from their region, and then the investments or the money, the earnings go into the media house and the production services. And there's quite a lot of examples of this, you know, internet cafes as part of media houses and stuff like this. And this, as we said earlier, I mean, that helps to survive on the everyday basis. But it also takes away resources and time from the journalistic work. So while it is something that helps you to survive and you know, potentially also to innovate in other ways with formats of the journalistic work, and it also can be a risk, right? Because it distracts you from your actual work and mission.
Absolutely. And if we just draw attention to the fact that ultimately the Media Viability Manifesto at its beating heart is really trying to speak into this bigger agendas, where we're trying to talk, for example, the OECD principles, you know, increasing the overall volume of financing into the sector, acknowledging that public interest news and public interest media deserve funding as public goods. So it's this two sides of one coin. There's many different steps and activities that can be done at the business viability level, but there's a real appreciation that they should never be expected to do this on their own, that they're, even then it might only ever happen in pockets, that in many environments the market is so fundamentally broken that that is impossible, whether they're in exile or working in hybridity, that actually the system also needs much more investment and nurturing.
Now, this was I feel like this was a really wide-ranging conversation about media at large and what to do about the things in the system that are broken. I was just wondering if there's anything before we move on to the next best practice tips that perhaps got less attention in this conversation that you especially want to highlight with regard to the Media Viability Manifesto.
I think what's important to stress is this is not a Global North initiative, that this is very much an appreciation and working with and alongside, listening step by step with actors of all different sizes and shapes from many, many different areas. And I think that really for me is the pride that I would have in this particular initiative, is that it is genuinely being done in an open and collaborative manner. And I genuinely hope that it becomes a springboard on with which people are prepared to kind of move forward.
We're also hoping to build a kind of community around that, to really see, okay, who's interested, who's already working, or who has ideas, you know, what are the things that are maybe missing? Very open to criticism as well, because I think all the criticism that we would get on to the Media Viability Manifesto really also brings us a step forward, right? So really, if we are able to become like a kind of diverse and critical community around media viability, that's another step towards the answer and the solution, hopefully, of this crisis.
That is definitely a call to discussion, a call for discussion for anyone who is listening. Please read the Media Viability Manifesto and come with your comments and your critiques, and let's make it the living document that it is supposed to be. It's a little strange to ask both of you what your three best practice tips are. You know, this whole idea is that we're talking about a paper that you wrote that is essentially a set of recommendations. But you know, for the sake of this format, I think we should try anyway. So if we could start with you, Claire, what are your three best practice tips when it comes to media viability?
Is this for a practitioner, a media organization level?
Yes.
So my three kind of recommendations, I think, for anybody working and trying to survive and thrive at the kind of business operational level. My first one would be definitely have a 360 degree view of your impact. Fundamentally, that will help with every aspect, whether that is doing pitch sessions for investors, whether that is doing grant applications, or whether that is contributing and connecting your lived experiences with what you know with bigger pictures in the region, national or international level. So definitely having this really nuanced understanding of your impact. The second speaks to, I think, what we, you know, very much the rationale at the moment is to take user-centric approaches to journalism. I think that would be my second big piece of advice. There are huge black holes in the data. So the more that we can create comprehensive pictures of audience needs, of user needs, what that translates to in reality, I think there's nothing lost with that. And sharing those experiences in your local environments, I think, is really important. The third, I would say, from my perspective as a kind of business viability advisor as well, speaks to a point that Laura raised about developing differentiated products. That's a formal kind of way of saying, really, understand the value add of what you are doing, not because you think it's good and of value, but really proving that you have quality differentiated products in that local marketplace that serves the needs of that community. I think those three foundational pillars would be my advice.
Maybe just to add to this, not necessarily in another three, but I think really find like-minded people, really share your experience. What we often see is that, you know, when there's a chance to come together, you realize that you're not alone with the problems, but really, you know, exchange with people that are in similar situations, but also maybe exchange experiences and lessons with or people from other world regions, because this is where we've seen really a kind of quite fruitful exchange of ideas, and also just this feeling of, okay, we're not alone. The other thing, additional to what Claire said, is really come to the table of discussions where possible. Often the problems, the challenges of media, really surprisingly and quite shockingly often, are happening without media at the table. So it really is, you know, the point, come. If it is about your future, about your media system, about practices of journalism, really get to the table and become part of the discussions where possible, also on the international level. And I think apart from the points that Claire has raised, this is something that I would say as a best practice that often isn't really done enough.
All right. So by my count, we have five best practice tips. And if I can just summarize them, it's... from Claire, you started by saying that you should have a 360 degree view of your impact. The second one is to make sure that your approach is user-centric. And you were making the point that there is a lot of black holes when it comes to the data. And the more complete idea, the more complete your idea is of your audience needs, the better it will be. Have differentiated products of quality. And from Laura, we have find like-minded people. Exchanges are very important. Realizing you're not alone is very important. and be represented at the table at an international level, if possible, be present at the discussions about the future of media. Do not let them talk about media without the media being present. So I think that is a good place to leave it there. Thank you so much to our guests today, Claire Cook and Laura Moore. Thank you, dear listeners. Appreciate you joining us today. Do check out the show notes for more. The Media Viability Manifesto will be there as well. And we are looking forward to your feedback. Till next time on Survive and Thrive.
Thanks for listening to Survive and Thrive, the Media Viability Podcast. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and make sure to hit like so that other listeners can find us as well. For feedback, send an email to dw-academy.surviveandthrive@dw.com. You can find all the information in the show notes.